The kingdom of heaven may be compared to someone who sowed good seed in his field. So begins today's parable. Later, Jesus will link the field to the world, and that may beg the question of when the kingdom of heaven began its entry into the world. Did the kingdom arrive when Jesus showed up in the flesh and started to talk about it? Or has the kingdom always been sown into the world from the time of creation? Were the seeds of the kingdom of heaven spoken into existence by the Son as the universe itself was generated? Robert Farrar Capon, whose writings on the parables I absolutely adore, insists that this was part of the great news of Jesus, that the kingdom was already in place and on the move, but that what had once felt hidden or glimpsed only through signs was becoming more visible, and that it had never been absent, just hidden, always part of the intention of God. So let's try on that interpretation. Imagine, if you will, that before humanity even had a chance to start into habits of destruction, the kingdom was already sown into the ground of all created things. Hidden, but moving with determination toward eventual fulfillment at the end of the age. And then along came distrust of God in its various forms, resulting in behaviors that undermine what is good in self and in others. Behaviors that well-intentioned people continue to stumble in and out of throughout their lifetime. And the kingdom of heaven is like this field where there are plants bearing grain and yet also weeds scattered amongst them, prompting the workers to ask the farmer, "Didn't you sow good seed in your field? Where do these weeds come from?" And the farmer answers, "An enemy has done this." At first glance, the kingdom project may look like a failed endeavor, wheat and weeds all mixed together. The farmer has been bested by his rival. Except that in the parable, the wheat has not been overcome. It manages to grow. It continues to take shape. And the farmer knows that the plants will make it to the harvest time. When his workers suggest gathering the weeds while the plants are still growing, he says no. For in gathering the weeds, you would uproot the wheat along with them. Let them both grow together until the harvest. And the kingdom of heaven is like this, like a field, where alongside the fruitfulness of the wheat is also the menace of the weeds. And still, the kingdom advances. And the farmer is undeterred, desiring to ensure that the wheat not be lost through efforts his workers might try and use to save them. The word let, as in let them both grow, is a Greek word that is translated here as let or permit, but its more common translation is forgive. Forgive the weeds next to these plants. In the kingdom of heaven, forgiveness is an essential strategy of the one who sowed the kingdom in the first place. It may not seem like a good strategy, but in this parable, Jesus is insisting that it is essential to the fruitfulness of those who respond to the kingdom and its originator. Though we may be tempted to identify and tackle the weeds, God knows that we lack the holy discernment that would prevent us from doing more harm, in part because of well-established patterns of trying to tackle evil with force. Thus, Robert Farrar Capon argues, that is why the enemy goes away after sowing the weeds. He has no need to hang around. Having no real power to muck up the operation, he simply sprinkles around a generous helping of darkness and waits for the children of light to get flustered enough to do the job for him. Goodness itself, if it is sufficiently committed to strong-arm methods, will, in the very name of goodness, do all and more than all that evil ever had in mind. Capon is saying that humanity tends to over-rely on a strategy of attacking evil head-on, such that even those who are good and well-intentioned can end up adopting agendas marked by control or even aggression in their efforts to deal with the problems of sin. And Jesus has altogether different methods in mind. There will be forgiveness, and his death, and his resurrection. Love will prove central to God's dealing with the reality of evil and sin. And since none of the wheat is without sin, God chooses the path of forgiveness and mercy. And if that feels a little uncomfortable, I think that's part of what Jesus is highlighting. Many of us would rather opt for identifying and eliminating the weeds. Surely I can recognize those who are evil, we may say to ourselves or others, and then conveniently miss the opportunity to recognize and seek healing for the parts of ourselves that flirt with or even participate in that which is evil. Because the evil in another is usually easier to see, and it feels so much more effective to attack than to wrestle with the reality of collective imperfection and the collective need to heal old wounds. The disciples were probably uncomfortable with this parable as well. In Matthew's gospel, well, today when I read it, the interpretation and the parable were smushed together. But in reality, in the gospel, he told that parable, he told another parable, he talked to the crowds, and then they went home. And this was the one parable that the disciples wanted to check in on. So when they arrive home, the disciples ask for the meaning of the parable of the weeds. They see it as the parable of the weeds, not a parable of the field, which shows that they have focused on the problem of evil, as we all do at different points in our faith journey. I think they struggle with this permission or forgiveness extended as the wheat and the weeds grow side by side. And perhaps Jesus is tired from a long day, but he does something he doesn't usually do with a parable. He gives an explanation that sounds like an allegory, where every single element is explained as a metaphor for something else, instead of maintaining his usual ambiguity and nuance. He also takes this very small part of the story, the phrase, I will tell the reapers, collect the weeds first and bind them in bundles to be burned, and gives that a much lengthier part of the interpretation. The majority of the parable is about the field and forgiveness and waiting. But perhaps he sees the look of worry in their faces. What if God doesn't care about justice after all? So he reassures them that at an appropriate time, there will be a sorting, and evildoers will experience the heat from without and a self-inflicted misery from within. But Jesus also knows what they do not yet know, that his own arrest, crucifixion, and resurrection will be part of his strategy for confronting evil. So he assures them that there will be a sorting, and he also makes it clear that it is not their job to do that sorting. That will come later, to be done by those in heaven, by those who only know total and complete obedience to God. Which brings me, if you will forgive me, to Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, which is a current day myth about good and evil. In this myth, the weeds are really clear. Nazis are the weeds. Not neo-Nazis, which are actually growing in number in the United States right now, but an actual Nazi survivor of World War II, bent on turning back time so that Germany can win the war. Because the enemy is an evil Nazi, unfettered violence feels sanctioned. And boy, will there be a lot of violence in this movie. The heroes have a justifiable target for all their pent-up aggression and loathing. And neither Indiana Jones nor his goddaughter need question the violence used to overcome him or his henchmen, or to question their previous actions, which have in truth contributed to this current crisis. In a way, the movie is almost an illustration of the problem of ripping up the weeds. By doing everything in their power to keep this Nazi from achieving the object that will give him unthinkable power, they actually keep making it easier for him to get his hands on it, all the while increasing the collateral damage in the present. A point made disturbingly hard to avoid when we see a group of children playing along in a street just before a dangerous and very destructive car chase comes into the frame. At some point, overly earnest priest that I am, I wanted to yell at the characters, "Would you all just stop what you are doing and heal yourselves? You have ancient wounds. Could you just focus on healing yourselves rather than all of this chaos?" Again, I'm an overly earnest priest yelling at an action movie. Because maybe healing those wounds might make other courses of action possible in the face of the threat. Interestingly, and you'll have to tell me what you think if you see the movie, this may be what the filmmaker is actually suggesting at the end, that we need to prioritize our healing. Jesus keeps saying, "Choose the path of the kingdom, the path that leads to greater wholeness, and trust me with the ultimate defeat of evil. Because when you go at evil, mimicking its same tactics, you inevitably do incredible damage to yourself and others. It is the work of a lifetime to open ourselves to the healing that God offers, and to trust God to help us find a better way of grappling with evil. And that is the invitation to heal, to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with our God.